I got a basketball Jones. Or do I? We're going to explore that on this episode of Pop Life.
Digital content on W8YR is supported by Hunter Springs Landscape Artisans, helping clients throughout the Central New York community create their own unique outdoor living space for 37 years. Services and project galleries found at hunterspringslandscape.com.
In the fall of 1997, Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls allowed a film crew to follow them as they went for their sixth NBA title in eight seasons. That resulted in a stunning portrait of one of the sport's most iconic athletes and a celebrated team. The Last Dance follows the Bulls' 1997-98 season from start to finish, while also covering the rest of the chapters in Jordan's remarkable career. The 10-part docuseries follows Jordan's timeline from when he was an emerging star on his high school team to becoming a world marketing force and cultural figure. The series takes its name from a phrase coined by then-Bulls coach Phil Jackson, who knew the season would likely be the final run for the core members of that Bulls dynasty.
The look away to Livingston. Jordan. Oh! A spectacular move by Michael Jordan! That's 13 consecutive field goals! We welcome you back to the Forum.
Have the fan support. It was a road game for us. We had to come together at the 12 players and the staff that was there, and it was really just up to us.
The Bulls lead by seven. Final seconds. Magic's three-point attempt blocked. Pippen comes away with it, and the Chicago Bulls have won their first ever NBA championship.
The docuseries has been immensely popular, nearly 24 million people sampling it, and I don't know many people who haven't seen it, but I do know one, and that's me. I just haven't had the interest in viewing it. And if you're listening to the show and you haven't watched it either, well, today we have someone who is going to attempt to convince us to give it a shot. Welcome back to the show, Seth Efrid, host of the popular podcast Sports with Friends and a sports radio broadcaster. Welcome back, dude.
My man, how are you?
I'm hanging
in there.
You're
safe? You're safe? You good?
I'm as safe as I can be. You know, I'm doing my social distancing thing, but I'm missing a lot of things.
Apparently, I'm coming up there in the fall, and I'm a little concerned about it, but we'll see.
All right. Hey, look, so you've watched The Last Dance, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Saw it. I mean, there's nothing else on.
Yeah. Well, so 24 million, nearly 24 million people sampled this thing as of just the other day. I'm not one of them. And so I'm inviting you to convince me to watch it. So you've seen the series. What do you know about how the production came about?
Well, the story, how it came about, I didn't watch it when it first aired. I waited because, you know, they stretched it out over 5 weeks and I was busy, you know, working and homeschooling my kids and things like that. So I saw it all in about 5 days. And the story that I was told was that when the Bulls in 1997 were going for this final run, Michael Jordan allowed NBA Entertainment to take cameras and track them everywhere they went for the entire season, not knowing what the footage would be. And that footage, after the Bulls broke up after 98, that footage was put in a vault in Secaucus. And from what the legend tells is that 3 years ago, when the Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron James beat the Golden State Warriors, that was LeBron James' crowning moment. And at that moment, the argument, at least from my perspective, was people were calling LeBron James the best ever. And people have short memories, and especially younger people, because there are people who are at Syracuse University now that never saw Jordan play. And so Jordan wanted the footage to be unearthed and put together in the form of a documentary to prove that he's the best ever. And if there's any doubt, and I am not a LeBron hater. As a matter of fact, I have immense respect for LeBron James, both for his basketball prowess, but also for his off the court stuff. Jordan's the best ever. And The Last Dance will surely convince you.
Yeah, so this obviously is feeding during this global pandemic and a stoppage in sports, feeding the beating hearts and hunger of sports fans all over the world who want some kind of content. Now,
that was never when it was put together. That was never a factor. Ratings are not the indication of how good the documentary is.
But isn't that why it's
the OJ documentary is better and less people watched it because we had life then.
But isn't that why was it always going to be released when it was released?
No, it was supposed to be released in July.
Okay.
It was going to be released after the NBA finals.
Right. And so I think they released it early because of
they released
a lack
it early
of content.
Because of coronavirus. Right. Yeah, and ESPN has been struggling because they're losing subscriptions, and you know they have no live sports, so they were looking for anything, and it was one of the things that came out. I would say a week after the NBA shut its season down, they found a way to, you know, fast track this documentary.
Right. So you mentioned folks who have never seen Jordan play. I've seen Jordan play. I saw all of those. I saw that entire championship run, all those championships. So I felt like I've lived through it, and there wasn't really anything new for me to tap into with this.
No,
so
I saw him play too. We're similar in age. There's a lot in the documentary that you didn't know.
Okay. Like, for instance?
For instance, when he was asked to make a political speech because there was a Republican bigot who was running for office in Illinois, and this Democrat, a young black man, really needed support. He was trying to garner some support, and Jordan refused. And his comment, which is in the documentary, is, "Republicans buy shoes too."
Right.
He had just done the deal with Nike. And that was something you didn't know that back then. We didn't know his motivations. There's a lot about the way he handled teammates. There is a lot about the way he pushed people. You could argue he bullied people. You could argue that his drive is different than any other athlete you've ever seen. The criticisms that I have of the documentary are that I just thought it was one-sided.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's Jordan's perspective. However, Jordan has this illustrious career, and there are so many things that you don't know. As a sports historian, you should want to see this film because it will circle and cross T's and dot I's a lot more than you ever knew. And that's just one example. Some of the other things that I noticed, the fascinating stuff for me was the baseball. When he goes to play baseball and they interview Terry Francona, they also interview his third base coach, and they have footage of him in the clubhouse in AA and how he bought food for all the minor leaguers. And, you know, they only put him in AA. They weren't going to put him in AA, but they needed someplace with a press box because of the huge media contingency that wanted to see him play. There's also a cover of Jordan on Sports Illustrated as a baseball player where they said it was a joke and a publicity stunt. And Michael Jordan refused to talk to Sports Illustrated for the rest of his career and the rest of his life. You know, he's still living it, but he has not spoken to Sports Illustrated since 1994. I mean, there's a lot. There's also the talk of when the baseball strike happened, baseball was talking about replacement players, and baseball reached out to Michael Jordan to cross the picket line, and he refused.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he decided to go back to basketball when the strike happened.
So who's the narrative voice throughout this thing?
I think the narrative voice is Jordan. There's clearly two interviews that Jordan sat down for, and it's pretty detailed. For example, when there's a great bit about Gary Payton. Gary Payton... in the 96 finals, Gary Payton just he frustrated Jordan a lot. And George Karl, the coach, didn't put Payton on Jordan, his best defensive player, on their best player for the first three games. And it defines that series. And Gary Payton explains in grand detail how he frustrated Jordan. Jordan is holding an iPad watching Gary Payton's comments. And then he reacts.
Hmm.
Like, that's good stuff. Again, I'm not saying it's the greatest documentary I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I could argue that journalistically, it's an incomplete story. But from an entertainment standpoint, I think it hits all the marks.
So what are the missteps? What's the if it's an incomplete story, what's missing?
The missing pieces are the fact that Jordan held all editorial rights. So every story is told from his perspective. And for example, I'll give you two examples. Number one, he has a longstanding feud with Bulls general manager Jerry Krause. Mm-hmm. Jerry Krause is no longer with us, but he had disciples and he had his, you know, people and his supporters, and none of them were interviewed. I mean, it's pretty bad. Like, Jerry Krause is lambasted. There was a story about how Horace Grant, and this is something we proved wrong. I'll tell you the story. There's a story that one time he didn't let Horace Grant eat because he had had either a bad game or a bad practice. And Harvey Grant, his twin brother, came on our show. I do the show on Twitch with Etan Thomas, another former Syracuse guy. And Etan knew Harvey Grant and asked Harvey, and they said, that's not true. But nobody was there to refute it because, again, this is Jordan's story. Mm-hmm. Again, this is nitpicky. The other stuff with the gambling. So he talks about his gambling, but they show news reports of all the speculation about Jordan's gambling. And then Jordan says, I didn't have a problem. I could have stopped at any time. Like, okay, here's somebody else that says, I thought he was out of control. Mm-hmm. Here's somebody else that says he was a detriment to himself. And then his father dies, and there was all this speculation about the father. It was a hit. And they squashed that right away. Mm-hmm. Now, there is evidence to prove that it is not a hit, and I'm not saying that, but it's a one-sided presentation.
Right.
And
right.
That's, again, that to me is not, it doesn't make it any less entertaining. I'm not watching this going, oh man, they're not going to get an A+ in their journalism class. Like, that's not what they were sitting out to do. What they were setting out to do was let Michael Jordan tell his story, and they did.
Right. And is it framed as such, or is it framed as a legitimate documentary?
It's framed like a documentary. Define legitimate. You know, yeah. I've seen documentaries about, you know, drug pushers in schools, and it's one sided.
Right.
I've seen, you know, somebody asked me on a show to compare it to the Aaron Hernandez documentary, which was on Netflix and came out about 3 weeks prior, or maybe a little longer. I just saw it 3 weeks prior. And it's a 3-part series on the life and time of Aaron Hernandez. That is from police footage, and they obtained all of Aaron Hernandez's in prison phone conversations because mm-hmm. those are all public record, and they got those. And so you hear the story, but it's not told from Aaron Hernandez's perspective. If anything, it's the opposite. That's a better journalism piece than this. But again, if you're saying to me, in a pandemic when there are no live sports and you get to go back and the music is gold, they play Party Man. There's one part where it's the early 90s and they're playing Prince's Party Man, and you see these highlights and you're just like, you're taken back to a time.
Well,
and what my favorite parts were the uniforms. Mm-hmm. I loved the Utah Jazz had those ugly blue uniforms. The Sonics had the uniforms that, because I covered the Sonics right after that. So mm-hmm. that was the 96 NBA Finals. I covered them in 98. And so it was a different roster, but it was the same uniform, same arena. I got to see Key Arena in its prime again. And then as far as, there's a great scene where they're on the plane, and 97, 98, they were, I was in Denver. I was the Broncos beat reporter. And they are on the airplane betting on the Super Bowl Broncos Packers. And I remember where I was, and now I'm seeing what Michael Jordan was doing the same day.
Mm-hmm.
So for a sports fan, from a historical standpoint, I don't think there's anything better than that. I now know what Michael Jordan was doing the day of one of my favorite sports moments. Hmm.
So to your point about limited POV and perspective, there is some fallout after this. We know that Horace Grant has come out and accused Michael Jordan of being a liar.
Scottie Pippen didn't like the documentary.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, what are some of his teammates, what do they think about how the team and they were portrayed during, for this documentary?
Well, I mean, Scottie Pippen didn't like some of the things that he was portrayed. Scottie Pippen, during his entire career, was underpaid. And Jordan basically says that. Now, Jordan's saying it in a nice way, but it's not. But Scottie Pippen's not going, you know, that second year, I didn't know any better, and I just took it, you know, like. And then there's this key moment in the finals towards the end where Pippen took himself out of the game. And Jordan doesn't let – well, Jordan kind of ripped him, and the other guys kind of ripped him. And Scottie says something to the effect of, well, if I had the chance to do it again, I would have done it again. But he doesn't elaborate. You know what I mean? Like, he mm-hmm. doesn't go further. And I could understand now. That doesn't bother me. I didn't think a second glance, but – when Pippen comes out and rips the documentary, I could see where he's upset.
Right. And Horace Grant has had some choice words.
My point is that he said, I was a snitch, but yet and still after 30 or 35 years, he brings up his rookie year going into one of his teammates' room, his former teammates' room, and seeing coke and weed and women. My point is, Why in the hell did he want to bring that up? What's that got to do with anything? I mean, if you want to call somebody a snitch, that's a damn snitch right there.
Yeah, well, the thing with the food, that didn't happen. And like I said, what Etan's reaction to that, because he had a much more... See, Etan Thomas has a much different perspective. And if you want to do an episode with him, I can set that up, because what Etan did, he was a rookie with the Wizards when Jordan played for the Wizards, and that's not in the documentary. Mm-hmm. Like, the documentary ends after the end of the 98 season, and I understand from a narrative standpoint, the whole idea was it was the story of the it's called The Last Dance, which the Bulls called that The Last Dance. They say The Last Dance during that year because they knew that the team was breaking up after 98. And what they do at the end of the documentary is they show what happened to every player. So Scottie Pippen was traded. They don't say where. Jordan retired. Didn't say for the final time, you know, because it wasn't the final time. Mm-hmm. You know, and they go through all the what happened to Dennis Rodman and then this guy and that guy. And then it ends. And people on Twitter that night were like, didn't he play for 2 years for the Washington Wizards?
Mm-hmm.
And why did Jordan not comment on that? Because Jordan had a very big falling out. Jordan was named president of basketball operations for the Wizards and given a piece of the team. And the plan was his ownership was going to increase. And then he got the itch to play and wanted to play again. And he was an employee of the, you know, he owned part of the Wizards and was an employee of the Wizards. So he played for the Wizards and they didn't get along very well at that point. Jordan was still averaging 20 points a game, but he was 40 and he had a bad knee and a bad back.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have wanted to see that, you know, and we did a thing on the Twitch show where a lot of the guys, Tyrone Nesby and Chris Whitney, those guys all came on our show, kind of a Washington Wizards reunion, and they were telling Jordan stories.
Hmm.
And I thought that was really cool. And I was like, that's something that was missing. But so again, that's not a reason not to see it.
Yeah. So is the Last Dance just maintaining historical record, or is it trying to persuade me with something else? What is it ultimately trying to do, in your opinion?
I think it tells the younger generation who Michael Jordan was. And I think it reinforces in the short-sighted 30 to 40-year-old who just remembers, you know, what's happening today. It's one of my old broadcasting jokes. Do you remember the Super Bowl where Eli Manning hit David Tyree and he caught the ball in his helmet?
Yep.
Syracuse's own. That's arguably one of the greatest catches in Super Bowl history. The next year, Santonio Holmes of the Pittsburgh Steelers catches a ball with his tiptoes in the end zone. And Greg Gumbel, and I'm just picking on Greg Gumbel
whose great delight.
Well, but Greg Gumbel says immediately, he says, that's the greatest catch in Super Bowl history.
Yeah.
And we're like, wait a minute, you just saw like that. And I'm again, it's happened dozens of times. That Greg Gumbel just sticks in my brain. And my whole point about that is that people forget their history. I hate when a guy hits a home run and says, that's the greatest postseason performance. I don't care what statistic you have. You didn't live the other guy. So don't say that. And for all the greatness that LeBron James is, LeBron James is doing it in an NBA where they don't play half the defense that they played in Jordan's thing. Mm-hmm. Jordan got mugged a lot. And they show it. The stuff with the Indiana Pacers and the Detroit Pistons and the New York Knicks in their heydays was a lot harder. And what Jordan did, I think, is greater and harder in that league. But that's not to say that if LeBron James was born in that time, he couldn't have been the great. But there's nothing LeBron James can do that will make him better than Jordan. It's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also hard to compare eras. You know, I always say, you know, is today's player better or worse than the guy from the 60s in baseball or football? You know, is Tom Brady better than Joe Montana or Dan Marino? It's hard to say that.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. Has LeBron James ever had to get through the bad
Antonio
boys.
Davis the, and the, Dale Davis the, of the Pacers yeah, at Market Square Arena
or the Detroit Pistons. I mean, it's like, you know, it's apples and oranges. So if my time on this planet were very limited and I can only watch one episode, which moment do you think I should tap into for the Last Dance?
That's so subjective because you're stuck in quarantine and you could watch this thing by the time you're done recording this.
I know, but I'm trying to get at what you think some of the pivotal...
But my favorites are not what other people's are going to be.
Okay.
My favorites were Seattle, so the 96 series, when he plays baseball. You know, again, that's my perspective.
Right.
And that's different. And I like the earlier stuff. Well, no, I like the stuff with the gambling. I thought that was really wild. The stuff with his dad was fascinating. You know, the stuff with Utah, that doesn't do anything for me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I know how that ends. And you know how all of this ends. You saw how this all goes. And I think there's something to be said. I loved watching the Charles Smith game where Charles Smith is underneath the basket and gets three opportunities and can't put the layup in. And, you know, there's a joke that he was fouled and Michael Jordan doesn't let that be said in the play. You know what I mean? Like, you never hear that. And I remember that because I was living in New York during that time and I saw that. And it's a wild time. I liked, you know, our mutual friend, the great Anthony Calhoun from the class of 96. Anthony found the lady there during the playoffs with the Pacers in 97-98. They cut to this woman who's sitting right behind the Bulls bench who is giving it to Jordan and giving it to Rodman. And she's super loud and you hear every word she says. And they found her. She owns a car dealership in Indianapolis.
Wow.
And Anthony Calhoun did a great job because that was really neat. You know what I mean? Like, that was really neat to see that person. Where are they now? And I just thought that was really cool. The Dennis Rodman stuff is cool. And, you know, I'm a Prince person. So seeing Carmen Electra was kind of neat. Although she's not portrayed very smart. She is, I don't know that she is as naive as she came off in that documentary.
Well, Seth Everett, a favorite of the Pop Life podcast. I think I'm going to check it out, man.
Everybody needs a thrill.
Everybody needs a thrill. I think I'm going to get mine through The Last Dance. I think I'll give it a shot. It's available, obviously, through ESPN and on Netflix now. So if you are like me and you haven't seen it, hopefully Seth has convinced you to give it a shot. I'm going to give it a shot, and maybe we'll come back together and
it doesn't need the ratings.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. 24 million people nearly has what they called sampled it. Thank you, my brother.
You got it, my man. Stay safe.
You too. That's going to do it for another edition of Pop Life, which is a product of WAER Syracuse Public Media. Our producer is Kevin Kloss. I'm Joe Lee. Be sure to download the podcast and subscribe to it. And give us a rating, if you will. Help us reach more people. Until next time.